Existe Narcotec Radio. Now, Diana Quick turned 75 on Tuesday, so we have selected from the BBC archive The Cello and the Nightingale. Back in May 1924, Beatrice Harrison became world famous thanks to the first ever live BBC outside broadcast and the first broadcast of a wild bird. In fact, any wild animal not in captivity. She'd noticed that when she practiced in her garden in Surrey, she often found that nightingales would sing along. Our play tells the story of this extraordinarily emotional and joyful duet with music performed by Julian Lloyd Webber.
Now, Miss Harrison, gently does it. You sit there.
Be very careful. That cello is the Peter Guarnerius.
Yes. Don't worry, it's fine. Here you are. Now, take your time, and then when you're quite ready, begin to play. The microphone is in place just over there and should pick up the song as soon as the bird begins to sing. Well, good luck.
Oh, my. I've played in some odd places in my time. But this sitting under a tree in my own garden must be the oddest. And I've faced some audiences in my time, but never an unseen one of thousands, all waiting for a bird to sing with me. Well, it's something different, but I can't help wondering what I've let myself in for this time. All my life I seem to have got myself into awkward situations without really meaning to.
Here they come. Go on, Baba.
You'd never dare.
Of course I would.
What? Get them out of step. The whole regiment.
Go on, then. I dare you.
I bet you a shilling.
Oh, you little fool. Where are your brains? You little fool. You'll learn.
Don't worry. If anything goes wrong, we can always blame the soloist.
Here goes, then. Oh, it's got to work. After all I've put into it. Now.
The Cello and the Nightingale by Patricia Cleveland Peck, with Diana Quick as Beatrice Harrison and Beatrice's music performed on the cello by Julian Lloyd Webber.
Daily Mirror, May 1924. On Monday, in the Surrey Woods, the BBC will make an effort to broadcast the Nightingale to all parts of the country.
Having persuaded the combined powers of the BBC to come all the way down here to make the first ever broadcast of a wild bird singing, having insisted that this garden is teeming with birds bursting to show off their songs to the nation, well, all I can say is I am relying on you now, nightingales.
Now you listen.
That's right.
Pull your earphones down, well over your ears.
Are you singing? Oh,
It's gone again.
No, never mind. If we're lucky, something very remarkable is going to be broadcast tonight. But we've plenty of time. We'll try again a little later.
Since this is the first attempt, there is of course no guarantee that the Nightingales at Foyle Riding, the Surrey home of the eminent cellist, Miss Beatrice Harrison, will rise to the occasion.
I am sure they'll sing. They have so beautifully every other evening this season. Oh, they must! It was such a job to convince everyone that my idea was a good one. It was while I was broadcasting the Elgar Concerto that it first came to me.
This concert is being broadcast simultaneously to all stations from Central Hall, Westminster, by the British Broadcasting Company, conducted by the composer.
It was the first time I'd ever broadcast. I loved this work so deeply, and the idea that thousands of people would be out there listening in was awe-inspiring, to say the least. I had played it first to Sir Edward in 1919, and was honoured and delighted that he chose me to make the first gramophone recording with him. This went well. He wrote me such a dear note afterwards.
I hope you're not too tired. Recording is rather an ordeal. I wanted to send a word of thanks to you for your beautiful playing. Sincerely, Edward Elgar.
And I began to play the work at concerts.
I must send you a word of sincere thanks for your exquisite playing yesterday. I hope to have the pleasure of hearing you play the concerto many times. Sincerely and gratefully, Edward Elgar.
He asked me to play the concerto many more times. I got to know him.
Don't worry. If anything goes wrong, we can always blame the soloist.
Oh, we all laughed. Well, perhaps I didn't laugh quite as loudly as the rest of them. But everyone seemed to love the concerto. It made me so happy. It was the high spot of my life.
Miss Harrison seems to exploit every device of which the cello is capable.
By her interpretation of this delightful work, she has placed it amongst the truly great concerti.
I have always wanted everyone to love the cello. It is an obsession with me. But I knew for some people even the beauty of Elgar's music is hard to grasp. If only I could find a way of getting through to them. What was needed was something very simple. And broadcasting was such an opportunity. Like a lot of musicians, at first I had my doubts. But now, thinking of that enormous audience, I was converted. And I knew they, the unseen masses, could be converted too, to a real love of music. So, by the last movement of this broadcast, I'd worked it all out. Someone in a magazine had written that if the sounds of the countryside could be relayed, he would succumb to the attractions of broadcasting. Mr. Reith of the British Broadcasting Company had jokingly promised him the song of the nightingale. But to me, it was no joke. Because at home, at Foyle Riding, at that very moment, there were blissful nightingales singing their hearts out every night. It came to me so clearly as I played. If they can relay music of Elgar over the airwaves from Central Hall, Westminster, why not the song of the nightingales from my garden in Surrey? So was born my idea, my quest. By the end of the concerto, I had made my plan.
So you see, Mr. Palmer, if they could come down to foil riding, I am sure it would be possible.
It is interesting, very interesting, but outside, to record a wild bird's song, I just don't know if the equipment we have would be suitable. I'll make inquiries, of course, but still not too much hope.
But will you try? And soon, now, but it goes away in June, for a whole year. Fine. You do understand?
Yes, of course, Miss Harrison, but to be frank, I am dubious. It doesn't sound really feasible to me.
But you will ask?
Of course. Good night, Miss Harrison.
Oh, Mother, I think they've cut me off again.
Poor Baba, you've been stuck on that telephone for hours.
This is the last chance. Come on, come on. Unlike me, the Nightingales won't wait.
Oh.
Mr. Reith?
Yes?
Oh, thank goodness. It's Beatrice Harrison.
Good afternoon, Miss Harrison. You gave me a wonderful performance with Sir Edward. It's a magnificent work, truly noble. And it came over super...
You, Mr. Reith, thank you very much. But it's not about that. I ask you if you've come to a decision about my idea.
What was it? The nightingales in your woods. Yes. I got your letter several... The Palmer mentioned it several times.
Oh, yes. Well, their size, it means...
But, my dear young lady, have you really thought it through logically? It could be a veritable wild goose chase, a terrible waste of time and money. And all the equipment...
Will you take microphones out to concerts?
Well, technically it might be possible. Might. Considerations. You don't know how careful I have to be. The questions I have to ask myself. Is this what broadcasting should be about? We already face opposition in so many quarters. You know the sort of thing. The wireless will close the theatres, bridge parties will be disturbed, good conversation a thing of the past, people...
Very suitable for your purposes.
Yes, but we have to be very sure that we give listeners what they ought to hear. Do you know, someone wrote to me saying how degenerate it would be if people grew to prefer listening to the song of the nightingale from the lanes. He compared it with his housemaid who has come to like tinned salmon better than the fresh item.
Oh, yes, the tinned nightingale. I read your article in the Radio Times. But you can't possibly compare...
It's nonsense, I know, but on the other hand, would we want to encourage the nation to imagine that all it had to do to amuse itself was simply turn a switch? You can see my dilemma.
Yes, but not everyone has the opportunity to go out into the lanes at night. You'd be doing people such a service. And the song is so beautiful. And if you think Surrey is not so very far from London...
There is that.
Everyone ought to have the opportunity to hear this song. Their hearts and souls would be uplifted. It's always such a joy to me. So think of all the people who have never had anything lovely to listen to, let alone the exquisite, magical nightingale. People in towns confined to dismal little rooms, completely deprived of the beauty of nature. I am sure God meant man to live surrounded by nature, and you have it in your power to bring it to them.
But what if we come all the way down to Surrey and the bird that does not sing? That's my principal worry with this project.
But it will sing. They will sing. You see, the house is surrounded by woods, and sometimes as many as 8 birds can be heard at the same time. Anyway, I have my own infallible way of tempting them. I play the cello, and they join in. They can't resist. It never fails. I've been doing it every evening this season. I play, and they answer.
But that's remarkable. The cello and the nightingale. A duet. Oh, now that is an attractive idea. Whatever gave you the notion?
I went out into the garden to play. I wanted to be a part of nature, I suppose. A couple of years ago, we moved to the country. It wasn't until then that I began to really appreciate the beauty of it all. This garden with its flowers and scents, the song of the birds... Nothing with nature. Oh, it was coming here to foil riding, which made me...
Row, row, row your boat, gently down, row your boat, gently down, slowly.
Girls, girls, control yourselves. Margie's only just learned how. Let her concentrate.
Well, I think she does it soon. To think it means that now we can go out motoring all on our own. What heaven!
Oh, not that today has been heaven. It's freezing cold, and all the houses we've looked at have been awful. Where are we, by the way?
Oh, who cares? It's so beautiful. Just look at the sun setting behind that wood. How I love woods in winter.
I saw Oxted on a sign back there.
Stop!
Oh! Mother! I nearly lost my hat.
Look!
What's the matter?
Look, there's a house for sale.
Oh,
let's have a look.
I'd hardly call this a house, Mother dear. A cottage, maybe. A small cottage. Dirty windows, dark inside. Low ceilings. And it can only have about four little rooms. Well, now, you think, at Cornwall Gardens, for you and Father, May, us two and Monica, we had breakfast room, night nursery, day nursery.
It's very pretty.
Look at the way this rose climbs up the walls. There are still a few late blooms left on it. It would be a dream to live in a cottage in the middle of woods, wouldn't it?
They have guest rooms, bedrooms, dressing rooms, and we overflowed from them.
We could build. Seriously, Margie. Oh, look at the view. It is glorious countryside. Oh, call those dogs, dear. We don't want them running off. Looking for a place out of London is that it would be more healthy.
Here, good dogs. Here. Well, all this fresh air would certainly be healthy, I suppose.
And London is getting unbearable now with all the traffic.
Living here in the wilds would take some getting used to.
I think it would be beautiful.
So do I.
Look, it's even got a well. There's someone coming. You can ask.
Good afternoon. Ma'am, ladies, can I help you?
Good afternoon. Well, firstly, we'd like... what is the name of this place?
Foyle Riding, ma'am.
Foyle Riding?
Or what's left of it. One time there was the old manor house with a lot of gillyflowers a year, but now they're selling it off, all the land, all them lovely bluebell woods.
There, girls, just look at it. Foyle Riding, which will be our home.
Yes, it was coming to the country which started it all. I didn't know then, of course, that it would result in my sitting here in the garden, feeling more than a little silly. But without the country, I'd never have had my great idea. We'd lived in cities all our lives. London for the Royal College of Music when all us girls were studying, and then Berlin and St. Petersburg to be near the great teachers. It was a big change to be surrounded daily by all this beauty. And I suppose it does something to the soul. For I knew after a short while that I should never live in a town again. And Mother really put her heart and soul into making it all exquisite. Rebuilding the house and creating a garden. In fact, we didn't miss London a bit. We still had plenty of music and parties. The vicar calls dear Mother the socialist conservative. I don't know how she does it, but she manages to mix diplomats, musicians, village people, everyone. Should be disaster, but somehow it works.
Did you really sleep outside until it was all built, Margaret?
We certainly did, Cyril. All our summer in damp little summer houses. But it has worked out for the best. You must admit, it is lovely now it's all finished.
Mm.
Mother's gone mad on gardening. Do you know Queen Alexandra even sent us seeds from Sandringham for the...
Victoria's here today.
She's coming. She often motors over from Ivor. And we go over to her, over to Ivor on Sundays and play trios and things. She loves going to Baba's concerts incognito. I think why she and Baba are such friends is because they both understand the stresses and strains of always being looked at. It's not all fun being a celebrity.
But how did you get to know such an exalted personage?
May and Beatrice were at the Royal College of Music with Cynthia. One day she invited them to her father, Lord Crewe's house, to play for the guests after dinner. And the guests just happened to be the King and Queen and Princess Victoria. She and Baba just loved each other immediately.
Well, that's not surprising. I've loved Baba for years and years.
Cyril.
Ever since I first saw her in Tremezzo on the Lake of Como. Oh, you were too little to remember, but I was in Frankfurt studying composition. And I came down to Italy to see Hugo Becker, who was giving Baba a few finishing lessons at Villa Balbagnello.
That's right.
She went over to his villa each day in a gondola. Freesias grew wild on the banks, and Baba was 17, the colour of peaches, and she wore an old blouse with her hair curling down her back. She was a poem, a Botticelli. And I wasn't the only one who was smitten. There were three other young men having cello classes, and we all vied with each other to try to get her to go boating by. But what did dear, dedicated, down-to-earth Baba prefer to do? I'm sure you can guess.
No.
Go to bed early so she could get up and do a good day. And one day I'll write some music really worthy of her and... Oh, what is that she's playing?
That's the Delia Sonata. He dedicated that to her. But have you heard his new cello concerto?
Yes, yes, I was at the Queen's Hall last summer when Baba brought it out.
Did you know he actually began to write that in our garden?
Oh,
that music is so full of nature. And lately, Baba's taken to wandering about the garden at all hours of the day and night playing her cello. She and Mother are hatching some great plot. But she'd tell you it.
This music room is splendid, though, Margaret. I love the musician's gallery and the huge fireplace. Very medieval. Built especially to show off your Irish wolfhounds to best advantage, one might think. They tell me you had a hand in designing it.
I did.
Ah, here she comes.
Margie did marvellously, didn't she? If she weren't such a splendid violinist, she could easily be an architect.
Hello, Cyril. Or a menagerie owner. You should have seen the look on Arnold's face just now as he settled at the piano up of Margaret's door.
What about Jerry the baby donkey, which you, dear Bob, rescued and brought home in a taxi and have been known to wrap up in a pack-and coat in cold weather?
Only a very old one.
Now, what's this plan, then, Beatrice? Something about playing outdoors? A concert?
No. Better than that. Oh, I do hope it works. You see, this spring, I began to go outside to play the cello before going to bed. It was so heavenly, the scent of primroses and bluebells on the evening air. You know that tree in the wood with an old seat round it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was sitting there improvising quite lazily when I heard the note of the mat, and it joined in with me.
Joined in? Oh, Baba, it was probably a coincidence.
No, honestly, it echoed my notes. I trilled up and down, and it followed, in thirds, always in tune with the cello. It was such a joy. Like nothing I'd ever heard before.
In thirds? How incredibly fascinating. You're not having me on, Beatrice, are you? Well, whatever was it?
What's that you want to know, miss?
What bird it was. Really, it was the most beautiful song I've ever heard. And the funny thing was, it didn't come from high up in a tree. It seemed near the ground.
Bless you, miss. That's the nightingale. So, he's come back after all these years. Your music's brought him back, miss. Now, don't you let him go again.
Cyril had never heard a nightingale. Neither had thousands of people. That was the whole point. So you see, Mr. Reith, that's what it's all about. Sharing the loveliness, the magic. Very few people have ever heard a nightingale, and sharing it in the way only broadcasting makes possible. And what a magnificent thing if the BBC could do it. What an achievement.
Well, a duet. It's an idea, I admit. But whether it could be relayed... I'll have to discuss it with Eckersley. Give it some more thought. I'll let you know. Thank you, Miss Harrison. Goodbye.
Goodbye. No imagination. I could scream.
So he said no. Well, come out onto the terrace. What you need is a nice cup of tea.
He said he'd have to give it more thought. Pass me a sandwich.
There.
There isn't time to think.
Well, don't give up. Keep phoning. He is tempted, or he'd have turned the whole idea down long ago. You know what a definite man Mr. Reith is.
Mm. He did seem rather keen on the cello.
So keep going. It would be quite something for the BBC, after all. Come on, Baba. You don't give up. Not you. You keep at it, come what may. Remember British grit?
That seems ages ago now.
Dresden, 1910. You and Mums, you were 17 and May 19.
It was funny, though, how you'd always had one of your premonitions that someday I would cut my thumb.
So you see, Doctor, she was cutting a bread roll and the knife slipped and they're on at the Opera House in half an hour.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. My poor, you are the cellistine. Yes. And so the thumb is rather... very important. I'm afraid it needs a few stitches. Now, let me see. Oh, I have needles but no thread. What can we use?
Oh, I have some thread that I use for sewing on buttons. Will that do?
It will have to do.
Oh, dear. There you are.
Thank you. Now, young lady, be brave.
Oh,
very brave. Can you touch the cello?
Oh,
it's burst open. Oh, what a pity. And of course you can't tear the plaster, so it means sewing deeper. Oh. Sir Shad, can you bear it?
Yes.
You're sure you can go through with it?
Yes.
Come on, darling. Here's your dress. Oh, my poor darling, don't shake so. We'll never get you done up. And you played brilliantly, and the hall echoed with calls of bravo and British grit. If you didn't give up then, you won't now.
That, Mother, I got through by concentrating utterly and staunching the blood in the tooties.
Baba! Oh, Baba, come quickly. It's Mr. Reith from the British Broadcasting Company, Savoy Hill.
Oh.
Mr. Eckersley's coming down to do a trial, and if the Nightingale sings, they're going to do the broadcast.
Hooray! Oh, darling!
Baba, I've always known music brings forth lunatics, but this is worse than usual. I mean, there are two huge lorries at the gate, and wherever you look, there are men creeping around the undergrowth, popping up at intervals, scaring the animals. And, my dear girl, no one can get in or out of the front door. Another group's taken over the porch and filled it with microphones and machines and goodness knows what.
And there are drums of cable all over the garden.
Yeah.
You have to be careful where you walk.
But it's exciting, isn't it? Listen to what it says in the Daily Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday, in the Surrey Woods, the BBC will make an effort to broadcast the Nightingale to all parts of the country. No guarantee is given that the Nightingales will rise to the occasion.
That's what I'm afraid of.
You'll be all right.
Ah, Colonel, what? Mrs. Harrison.
Oh.
Let me introduce Captain West.
How do you do?
Mr. Eckersley, Captain West, how are you progressing?
I think we're almost ready.
Amazing. Is she to sit here? I mean, do explain the procedure.
Oh, yes, sir. Of course, you're an engineer.
Oh, was, dear boy, was. 20 years in India as head of the College of Sappers and Miners at Roorkee, then in command of the home battalion of the REs at Chatham. But that's in the past. Now, what of all this? I mean, is this the microphone?
Yes. Oh, don't go too near,
what?
Sir. The magnets inside will stop your watch.
Oh, good Lord.
Most of our equipment is over there in the little thatched summer house.
Right.
We've put this microphone as near to the nest as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sensitive magnetophone microphone, a big contraption, I'm afraid, commonly known as the meat safe.
Oh, yes.
But it's quite good, very good, in fact, so long as there's not too much wind blowing.
And now that they've got it in place, maybe you, Miss Harrison, would like, please, to proceed to the chair we've placed here in the ditch?
Yes, yes, do please begin to play, just as you did last night. As soon as we pick up the bird song, a red light will glow, you see, over there, like a lighted cigarette. Now, that signal will mean that you and the Nightingale are coming through together.
It is fascinating.
But my dear boy, how does the sound reach London?
We've got portable amplifiers in the summer house.
Oh, I see.
As soon as the signal comes through clearly, we amplify it and relay it by landlines to the two LFs, thence to be broadcast simultaneously to all stations and the waiting thousands. Now, if you don't mind, Miss Harrison, we'd better get you installed.
Oh, it's getting chilly. Don't catch cold, dear. Give her your coat, John.
Oh, put it on, Baba.
Thank you, Daddy.
And good luck.
Pipes are calling all down the glen.
Oh, I do need some luck. Where are you, nightingales? Every night you've joined in the minute I started to play. And now I'm sitting here in my best concert frock and father's old coat. The biggest audience I've had in my life out there, waiting. And I'm getting worried. Worried that the whole thing is going to go badly wrong. Oh, goodness. I'll never grumble about ordinary stage fright again. Compared with this, how I normally feel before a concert is quite pleasant. And at least it passes off as soon as I begin to play. Whereas now, the more I play, the worse I feel. Look, you birds, I'm doing my best. What's wrong with you? Maybe you don't like this music. Right, I'll try something else. People out there waiting.
Reception's much better. If it's going to work, it won't be long now. Have you got the book?
Here it is.
Good. Now, listen, my boy, this is a historic event. If it comes to pass and the nightingale does sing, you'll remember this night all your life. So to get us in the appropriate mood, we're going to read a great and beautiful poem, Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. Do you know it?
No, Uncle.
Well, you listen. My heart aches and a drowsy numbness pains my sense, as though of hemlock I had drunk, or emptied some dull opiate to the drains. 1 minute passed, and Lethe wards had sunk. 'Tis not through envy of thy happy lot, but being too happy in thine happiness, that thou, light-winged dryad of the trees, in some melodious plot of beechen green and shadows numberless, singest of summer in full-throated ease.
And my back is aching, and my legs going to sleep. Yet I dare not move, and I dare not stop. What if they don't sing? I daren't think of it. After all I told Mr. Reeve. And it's no one's fault but my own. Why did I ever want to do this idiotic thing? Why?
Here, in this lovely setting at Oxted in Surrey,
it is David.
The home of Miss Harrison, the well-known cellist, we hope very soon to bring to you the moment.
I think it's coming through. He's talking about it. Good.
It is spring night down here in Surrey. The house is a wonderful 16th century half-timbered building and is surrounded by large beds of tulips, reds and golds, which present a gorgeous blaze. A while ago, we heard the blackbirds sing their evening songs and watched the sun set behind the woods, flushing the sky with a glorious blaze of golden light. Now, here in the woods of Foyle Riding, the scent of bluebells fills the air. Venus is setting and the moon is... And quite close, the brilliant Jupiter is rising through fleecy clouds in the east. We wait as Miss Harrison continues to play for the song
in the air
of the night.
Okay, he's off. What's the matter? I went to check that cable, and you'll never guess what I've just tripped over. Only a brigade of blooming tortoises crossing the lawn.
Yeah, it's a rum place, all right. Oh. I looked in one window over at the house, and blow me if I didn't see a monkey looking out.
You're sure it wasn't a reflection?
All going well over here, boys? West, that sounded fine from this end.
Good, good.
Now let's hope it's all coming through. If we get a signal that the bird is singing, one of you must run down to the forge.
Yes, sir.
The old boy there has a set tuned in, and you can listen in to see how it sounds. We don't want to keep troubling the family over at the house.
Oh, it feels as though I've been here all night. Oh, birds, why do you persist in remaining silent? Is it just to drive me crazy? Usually you're singing your hearts out ages before this. Oh, come on. Hurry! Hurry!
Patience, my young lady, patience. Nothing good comes quickly. You feel a year is long to work on one concerto. But no, if we worked 10 years on the Dvorak, we could still find new problems. You, my young Beatrice, must play like a man, but without losing the tenderness and grace of a woman. Never say I cannot get this tone. Always say, I will.
I will make it work. I will.
What's that noise?
Oh. I better go and see what's happened.
Oh, yes. Oh.
Oh, goodness, the red light came on. But the nightingale hasn't sung. I wonder what's gone wrong.
Miss Harrison. Miss Harrison. False alarm, I'm afraid. We got a signal through, don't know what it could be. It sounded like someone sawing wood.
Sawing wood? Is that what my playing's come to?
Captain West. Captain West.
What is it? Well, they've solved the mystery. It was just two rabbits gnawing the cable.
Oh.
Don't worry. Just keep playing.
Just keep playing. This is awful. What can have happened to the birds? What possessed me to go ahead with this ridiculous idea? How stupid I'll look if nothing happens. Just when my career was going so well, I deliberately make a monumental idiot of myself. How I hate feeling a fool. Not that it will be the first time.
Madam Melba, I wondered whether it would be convenient to present myself to you before the performance.
Ah, you're the young cellist, then. My supporting artist. I suppose you'd better come in.
It is indeed an honour for me to tour Canada and America with you, Madame Melba.
Miss Harrison, enchanted. Let me look at you. Yes, they said you were a pretty little thing. So you'll open the programme for me. I must say, I think you put yourself at a disadvantage with such an instrument. So big, so ungainly, and so very unfeminine. Still, you play well, and will do to prepare the public for my performance. It's most important that they are receptive. The audience must be in the mood to like me.
Oh, madam, they do, they do. They must really love you. Such a thing anywhere before. In fact, I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen with my own eyes such proof of devotion.
Proof of devotion? What can you mean?
Didn't you know? As I came into the theatre, I saw it. Girls are strewing the floor with flowers for you to walk on. I saw them. Baskets of lilies, roses, all scattered on the floor. That is real devotion.
Oh, you little fool. Where are your brains? Don't you know I pay for that myself? Wherever I go. It's money well spent, believe me. Little fool. You'll learn.
And the little fool grew into a big one. Oh, I'm so uncomfortable sitting all crooked like this. What made them put this chair half in and half out of the ditch? It's about the most awkward way of playing a cello one could think of. And I'm starving, and my stomach's rumbling. I just hope that isn't broadcast. And how I'd love to stop for a cup of tea. Oh, come on, come on. Please sing for me, nightingales. Don't let me down. You don't know how important it is. I only want to share you.
Just come to see if the microphone's still in position. Whatever's that?
Oh, goodness, mind the donkey, Jerry. Oh, you poor man! Are you all right? Did he tread on you? He's only a baby donkey.
He kicked me. And he's knocked against the microphone. Oh, there'll be hell to pay for that damage. Let me look. Right. Oh, it seems all right. I must go back and check. Little devil.
I'm so sorry. I did tell them to lock him up.
You just keep on playing, miss.
Are you sure they're going to sing together, Uncle? This bird and this lady playing?
Oh, no, lad, it's an experiment never been done before. We can't be sure. Mm. That's the fun of it. You don't know what'll come through. Reminds me of that seance your auntie's mum took us to. But, lad, if they do sing, we'll be ready. Now, you read a verse.
I cannot see what flowers are at my feet, nor what soft incense hangs upon the bough. But in embalmed darkness, guess each sweet well with the season.
Oh, you're getting tired, lad. Yeah, I've made us a nice cup of cocoa. Then maybe you'd better get up to bed. It's hours past your bedtime.
Oh, no, Uncle. Please let me stay up, please. I do want to hear the nightingale.
Well, maybe just a little longer.
Uncle, when can I start to make my own crystal set? You said soon.
Yes, I've got everything ready, lad. We'll do it at the weekend. It's the best thing a boy can do. As a wireless hobbyist, I've learnt something new every hour I've listened in. Yeah, I'll start yours on Saturday. Wireless, it's a mind builder, a thought trainer. It's the best toy a boy can have. Almost a miracle. Have you ever thought? Music, when soft voices die, vibrates in the memory. But where on earth does music go when you switch off Duello?
Did you really meet my auntie at a wireless listening party?
Did she tell you that?
Yeah.
No, but I popped the question at a Riverside radio party. I borrowed a wonderful set. A portable Etherphone 5. Four-valve tuner, receiver and power amplifier combined. What a night that was. Lovely and warm down by the river, even after the sun had set. And the air was full of the scent of fresh air. The moonrise, we counted the stars, and we danced and danced to the music. Unforgettable. And the reception was perfect.
Reception's good, but I'm sorry to say it's still only the dance band.
Mr. Eckersley said they'll interrupt at the moment.
Every night they've trilled away without a care the minute they heard
us in the garden. The men and the equipment have put them off. Birds are shy little things.
Do you think they might have flown right away?
Well, they're nesting, so I doubt that they'll have flown right
Don't
away.
Don't worry. It will work. I've got a feeling.
You're lucky. I feel more and more hopeless the longer this goes on.
So do I. It's getting terribly late.
Oh, poor Baba. She must be freezing cold. I expect she regrets ever getting mixed up in this circus.
Oh, no, John. Nothing venture, nothing dare. Baba knows that. She always had little. She did something far worse.
John,
when she dared Baba to get the whole band out of step. So as they marched past, Baba, the little fiend, darted out.
Oh, yes. Could I ever forget it? I could hardly believe my eyes. Not my dear little daughter. She almost pushed two bandsmen right over.
What a little horror. Who would have believed that Baba would do something like that?
And the sergeant major just picked her up, tucked her under his arm and carried on marching as though nothing had happened.
And I pretended not to see. Oh, certainly not. I tried to forget it.
But Baba won her shilling.
How long do you think this can go on?
Well, it can't be much longer, for sure. The station goes off the air at 11:10.
The old man will be disappointed.
There's always a risk, you knew that.
It's her I feel sorry for.
Not Miss H. Yeah, she sets such store by it.
The ruddy birds did join in last night at the trial run. Sang their little hearts out. I can't understand it.
Yeah, it's a pity. Someone had better go and tell her to pack up.
Who?
Well, I'd better...